Shri Krishna. So today we see the last three verses of the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So the section 36 to 43 is about controlling lust, and we discussed 36 to 39. We discussed 40 also yesterday. 36 to 40 we discussed. So basically, Krishna has come to the point where he has described the sitting places of lust. It is senses, mind and the intelligence. And just like every criminal has a modus operandi. Modus operandi means the way it operates, where he operates. So like that, Krishna has described the modus operandi of lust. And now he is going to describe to us how we can counter and control and conquer lust. So first, that is counter, control and conquer. Counter means lust is attacking, we try to defend ourselves. And control means whatever is the level, we don't let it increase. And conquer means we completely defeat it. So generally, for most people, lust keeps conquering their consciousness more and more. So we have to counter it, check, control it and then conquer it completely. So Krishna starts, Krishna will basically repeat the same two-point formula which he has talked about in 2.61. But he will explain its efficacy, the reason for its effectiveness through a philosophical analysis. So let's start with 41. Asmat tvamindriyanyadav niyamya bharatarshabha papamanam prajahiyena jnana vijnana nashanam.
Therefore, O Arjuna, best of the Bharatas, in the very beginning, curb this great symbol of sense, lust, by regulating the senses and slay this destroyer of knowledge and self-realization.
Yes. So, there are several significant words in this verse. Jnana vijnana nashanam. So, nashanam means destroyer. So, earlier Krishna had used the word avritam jnana metena. It covers knowledge. Now, Krishna is using the word nashanam. It destroys knowledge. So, actually, in one sense, the soul's sat-chit ananda nature is never destroyed. The soul is always chit, but the soul is no longer aware of its chit when it is covered by lust. So in that sense, the avaran also leads to nashanam. It's like a person, maybe a millionaire's son, but if he gets absorbed in watching a movie in which the hero is a pauper, then for all practical purposes, $1 million are lost to him. Now he is a pauper. So the avaran, the illusion created by the movie, makes him forget his wealth and practically destroys his ability to access and use that wealth. So like that, the soul has spiritual knowledge, but that spiritual knowledge is for all practical purposes destroyed. Although ontologically or existentially it cannot be destroyed, but for all practical purposes it is destroyed. That's why using the nashanam. Jnana vijnana nashanam. So, first of all, the covering of lust destroys our knowledge. What does that mean? That means that actually it perpetuates our body misidentification. In that sense, our knowledge of our spiritual identity is destroyed. Now, in general, we see that when a man comes in the presence of a woman, or a woman comes in the presence of a man, both of them become highly bodily conscious. Because both of them want to impress each other. And then they think, how am I looking, how am I dressing, how am I walking, how am I smiling, and all these things, and they become very bodily conscious. So the first thing that lust does is, it increases our bodily consciousness. And bodily consciousness is basically a sign of ignorance. And that's why it says jnana nashanam. And to some extent, this is very, very damaging to spiritual life. Because we can practice spiritual life, we can chant Hare Krishna, we can go to temple, we can read Bhagavad Gita, even when we are in bodily consciousness. But if we don't ultimately aim to get out of bodily consciousness, then we can't really achieve a deep spiritual realization. Now this Jnana Nashinam is one of the universal characteristics of lust, which plagues all religions. You know, Hindus may say our religion is the greatest, Muslims may say our religion is the greatest. But all of them are under bodily conception of life. So when we say Krishna consciousness is the greatest, the first thing that we need to understand is Krishna consciousness is not to be identified with our current bodily designations. Sarvopadhi Vinirmuktam. So unless our practice of spirituality destroys this bodily conception, this practice of spirituality is very superficial. Very superficial. It may be of some use, but the foundation of lust, the foundational misconception that has been created by lust, as long as it is not destroyed, one is not actually going to make a deep spiritual advancement. That's why in many religions, even when they talk about the rewards for faithful following of religion is in terms of explicit sexual enjoyment with the damsels in heaven and things like that. So, again the idea is, if one has to enjoy with the opposite sex, one has to have body. So, and if you see the Semitic doctrine, Semitic refers to Judaism, Christianity and Islam, these three religions, the Semitic doctrine of bodily resurrection perpetuates the bodily misidentification. Because their idea is that our body as it is, that will be resurrected. And there was a Christian theologian, Origen. So, this Origen, he had some understanding of reincarnation. And he made very strong arguments against resurrection. One of the arguments was, he said, you bury a body in a coffin, and the components of the body are all destroyed. And probably they are recycled into other bodies. So, if a person is going to be resurrected for 10,000 years, you know, the components, the physical material component that has made his body may have gone through 100 lifetimes. They may have comprised 100 different bodies. So, which body will be resurrected? These components, they will become a part of which body to be resurrected? So he says, and those who are completely dogmatic and blind in their faith escape from reason by the foolish assertion that nothing is impossible for God. So, yes, nothing is impossible for God is true, but you don't have to make God do impossible things to support your foolish arguments, isn't it? So, the point is that, unfortunately, the bodily conception is perpetuated by the idea of bodily resurrection. And that's why these religions, although what was taught originally may have been transcendental, but unfortunately, much of what is practiced, or much of the motivation and consciousness of the practitioners while practicing, is still within the bodily conception. So, Jnana Nashinam, lust destroys the bodily conception. And then, Vijnana Nashinam. Now the word vijnan generally refers to realization. Vishesha rupena jnana. As in the 6th chapter, Krishna will tell Arjuna, jnana vijnana truktatma. That who becomes satisfied, it's not that knowledge alone will make us satisfied. When there is knowledge and there is realization of that knowledge. That means that knowledge, I am the servant of Krishna, but there is realization. Actually when I try to serve Krishna, I am still in a natural, peaceful, joyful situation. So there, one becomes trupt atma. So, there the word is realization. So, yes, actually lust can destroy our realizations also. We may get some realizations of the truths of Krishna consciousness. But, the more we indulge in sense gratification, the more those realizations also get covered. What does realization actually mean? See, faith and realization, they are not static, they are dynamic, they are changing. It's not that we get faith and the faith stays with us forever. No, the faith can be lost. When we say Neha Vikraman Ashosti, that refers to the attraction to Krishna. So, that attraction to Krishna will stay. Some sort of deep mystical, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, avashopita, riyateya avashopita, heart is helplessly attracted. So that attraction which we have developed towards Krishna will stay. But still, the mind can always propose other desires. And the intellect can always come up with doubts. See, when we say that we have developed an attraction towards Krishna and that attraction towards Krishna is eternal, that does not mean that our free will is lost. Our free will is still there and our mind and intelligence are always there to provide other alternatives to our free will. Like, if you have read this book of Radha Maharaj, Journey Home, there he says when he was in London, you know, he felt that he would like to prove himself to the hippies around him. You know, he tried to get in the materialistic way of life. And he said, I was willing, but I felt lost. Like, what does that mean? You know, the natural attraction towards Krishna was there. That's why he felt lost. But still, because of the peer pressure, what was happening was, he was trying to live the way the materialistic people were living. So the point is, that we never lose our attraction to Krishna. But we can lose our faith. We can lose our realizations. So, what does it mean to lose our realizations? Realization basically means that we have these three knowledge acquiring faculties: protection, anuman, and shabda. So, by shabda we hear the reality. And then by pratyaksha, we experience what seems to be the reality to us. Now the nature of pratyaksha is that sometimes it will confirm shabda, sometimes it will apparently refute shabda. Just like this big tsunami came in Japan and the triple disaster, earthquake, tsunami and nuclear disaster. So now, if you see the video of that, you can see how feeble and fragile our existence is. So to some extent by protection, we can see what scriptures are telling, that this world is mukhalem, it's temporary, ashashvatam. But then, by that same protection, we may see some movies, some videos about the posh and the elegant buildings and skyscrapers in America and the fast cars, the smooth roads and the very comfortable lifestyles. So, protection can both strengthen our faith or protection and destroy our faith. Just like, you know, water can float a ship and the same ocean water can sink a ship. Now, what determines whether the water will float the ship or it will sink the ship? It determines on several factors. One is, what is the nature of that water? And second is, what is the expertise of the captain who is navigating the ship? That's why if you remember that verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam where it's described that this human body is like a boat. Plavam sukalpam guru karanadharam. So, nirdeha madhyam sulabham sudurlavam plavam sukalpam guru karanadharam. So there, the favorable breezes are compared to the Vedic literature. So that means that actually in this material world, we have to see and interact with the pratyaksha. But pratyaksha in itself can tell us the truth or it can take us away from the truth. So realization means that we experience the pratyaksha of this world and we do anuman that harmonizes the pratyaksha with shabda. We use anuman means the reasoning faculty, the analytical faculty, the logical faculty. So when we do anuman, for example, if we see a tsunami and somebody may say, oh, good, we are not living on the coast, so we don't have any danger of tsunami. So, yes, we don't have any danger of tsunami, but there are so many other dangers which are there. So, this sort of anuman is not going to harmonize with the chanta. Or you may say, oh, actually, India is not an earthquake prone zone, Japan is an earthquake prone zone. But no, the earthquake prone zone might be not there, but there are so many other quakes in this world.
You know, we can get the quake in our own body, a heart attack or a paralysis or something like that.
So when we do Anuman, when we do reasoning, that harmonizes the Pratyaksha with Shabda. Then what we get is realization. Yes. Realization means that which is a reality, we accept it to be a reality. So it is a reality, this world is a place of misery, but when we accept it to be a reality, then that is a realization. So that's why, now if you see, Shabda is unchanging. But Pratyaksha and Anuman, what we get from it will constantly be changing. So therefore, when a person actually indulges in lust, in sense gratification, then basically he is using the Pratyaksha and Anuman contrary to Shabda. The Pratyaksha, one sees beautiful sense objects, Anuman one imagines, yes, this will give me so much enjoyment. And then because of this use of Pratyaksha and Anuman, contrary to scripture, the previous experience of the truth of scripture is forgotten. Because the nature of Maya is, sometimes we can experience pleasure in this world also. Now, scriptures also say that there is pleasure, but it is very temporary. But actually, when one is infatuated by the pleasure, that doesn't appear temporary. That appears to be wonderful. In fact, not only wonderful, it appears to be irresistible. We cannot live without it. So therefore, when Krishna says Vijnana Nashanam, that means when actually we indulge in sense gratification, whatever past realizations of Krishna consciousness that we have had, they get covered up. They get covered up. So they temporarily they get destroyed for us. So just as devotees may have experienced the how wonderful kirtans are, how wonderful the association of devotees is. But if somebody gets into an affair with some woman, initially yattadagre amrutoham, it'll appear like nectar. So of course one will realize eventually Paraname Vishamiva also that in the end it is like poison. But then see, one does not have to unnecessarily drink that poison. We can understand that it is poison and we save ourselves from that. So sometimes Pratyaksha and Anuman can detract us from our feet. And especially when Pratyaksha and Anuman are motivated by lust, are motivated by the desire to fulfill lust, and they can completely cover us. So the Prabhupada uses the word Vijnana in another sense over here. Prabhupada translates the word Vijnana as the urge for self-realization. So what lust destroys is not just the knowledge of self-realization, but also the desire to acquire that knowledge. Why? Because people feel life is okay over here, life is comfortable over here. Yes, I'm happy, I have my family, I have my children, I have my job, I have my career, I'm happy. Why do you need God? You know, one of the fastest growing schools of thought in America is now called as apatheism. What is this apatheism? Apatheism, I don't care about any religion, you know, Christianity or Islam or Hinduism or Buddhism, just don't bother about it. Apathy. They say, you know, you people, and they have some logical arguments on their side also. They say, you people, you bother and argue about what is the nature of the other world, and you fight in this world for that. So this world, why are you increasing the problems of this world by imagining something about the other world? Just forget it. Now it's true, you know, from their point of view, it'll appear true. And the history of religion is to some extent that especially those who are fanatical, those who say, our way is the only way, they have created conflicts throughout history. And in that sense, they are right. But this apatheism has come because of the illusion that life in this world is not too bad. Life in the world is good, it's comfortable, and therefore we don't have to worry about anything else. And those who worry about anything else, they are creating problems. But it's not true. Because the world, life in this world is comfortable only in an illusory temporary sense. So, the urge for self-realization can also be destroyed by indulgence in lust. Because one feels that, why bother about all these things? Why bother about all these things? And that's why in general also, you know, when a person comes in their teenage years, then even if somebody has been a devotee since childhood or is born in a devotee family, when they come into their teenage years, what happens is, the urge, see, Prabhupada is using such a precise word. Where do we hear the word urge? Vegam, isn't it? Vacho Vegam Manasa Krodha. So like that, the urge. So what does urge mean? Urge is related to urgency. So when the urge comes, we want to urgently fulfill it. You know, when the urge comes, you cannot think. When you feel, you feel, a person feels lusty. Okay, after getting married, I will enjoy. No, I want to enjoy now. So urge means it creates an urgent desire. That's the meaning of the word urge. So, actually, the urge for self-realization. That means, yes, self-realization may be important, but, okay, later, later. That's a common excuse in India. Spiritual life is later. Later, in old age. So there is no urge for self-realization. So in the life of Buddha, you know, first time when he saw at the age of 29, those three miseries, old age, disease and death. He had gone out with his chariot Channa without informing his father Siddhodaya. And then he came back and he was completely aghast. And then he went out again once. And then he saw the fourth great sight as described. So he saw a mendicant, shaven head, wearing a simple robe, carrying a stick. He got down from the chariot and asked, "Who are you? What are you doing?" He said, "I am terrified of the repetition of, I am terrified of death, old age and disease. And therefore, I am seeking salvation by cutting myself off from all worldly pleasures and focusing on the eternal truths of life." And then he said, "Yeah, this is what I should do." And then, so, as long as the illusion of the comforts of royal life was there, there was no urge for self-realization. But once he saw the miseries of material existence, and then he saw somebody, there's a way out of it. That there at least, he did not know the way out of it at that time, but at least there are people who are trying to seek a way out. Then that came as an urge for him. So what happened was he just immediately left. You know, his wife was there, his son was there, he showed her and Rahul, but he just left it and went up. So it's an urge for self-realization. So when a person is infatuated by lust, even if that person is a cultured person, even if he has experienced devotional life, he may realize that, okay, devotional life is important, but it is not urgent. It can be done later. It can be done later. And so many times when devotees, even practicing serious devotees, you know, when they get into a comfortable material life, when they have a good steady job, where they're performing nicely, and then they get married and they have a not too incompatible spouse, then then what happens is that they say, okay, I feel comfortable. Yes, we have to practice spirituality, but no, we should not be fanatical also. We have to be balanced, we have to be practical. And then the urge goes away. So, basically, the urge for self-realization, the more we can keep off sense gratification from to a distance, the more the urge stays. And it's like sense gratification is like a painkiller. And when we take the painkiller, then we don't feel the need for the medicine. So material life to some extent is miserable. If it's not miserable, at least it's boring. So, so then everybody needs some change. So even so, if we seek that change in sense gratification just gives some relief. Although that relief is temporary, it's illusory, it just gives some relief. But then, just as a patient who is sick and is taking a painkiller, does not feel the urgent need for the medicine. Like that, a person who is indulging in sense gratification, even if he knows that sense gratification is not the right thing to do, it's not the solution, I have to practice Krishna consciousness, he doesn't feel an urgent need for it. So that's why, in one sense, the more austere we can live, the more we can become serious about Krishna consciousness, and the more we can experience the taste for Krishna consciousness. The taste for Krishna consciousness comes by absorption in Krishna consciousness. The more we are absorbed in Krishna, the more we can relish the taste of Krishna consciousness. But bhogaishvarya prasaktana taya apaharita chetasam. So our chetasa, our consciousness is apaharita. abducted or kidnapped. Krishna gives a very precise word. By what? Bhoga and Aishwarya. So, material wealth and the association of the opposite sex. These two abduct our consciousness away. And when a person is indulging in these two things, then he cannot be absorbed in Krishna consciousness. And when one cannot be absorbed, naturally one becomes distracted. So, then one is distracted, then one cannot get the taste of Krishna consciousness. That's why the urge for self-realization. Srila Prabhupada takes Jnana Vigyan and refers to the Bhagavatam verse in Chatushloki Gita, where Krishna is revealing to Brahmaji the most confidential knowledge. This is Jnana Vigyana Samanyatam. That is the knowledge which I have given to you. So that knowledge will be destroyed if we indulge in lust in an unrestricted, non-scriptural way. Tasmatam Indriyani Adau. Now, another point that Prabhupada explained in the purport is Adau. Adau is in the beginning. So Prabhupada takes in the beginning to mean two things. One is right from childhood. In the beginning, control lust. Or he says, as soon as one realizes the seriousness of the situation. So for most of us, childhood was already passed away. So as soon as one realizes the seriousness of the situation. And generally speaking, if somebody has the experience of sense control and the experience of higher taste in childhood, those impressions drag the person back. Those impressions stay in the mind and they will bring the person back. But if you have not had those impressions, Sri Krishna consciousness is extremely powerful. Whatever past negative impressions we might have got, we can wash them out. But Adav, in the beginning, that as soon as possible, one has to discipline the senses. So, again, the same point, that Adav will be postponed by Vijnana Nashinam last. So actually, you know, for a serious devotee, he never thinks that death is unreal, death is not existent like the materialistic people think. But he thinks that death is a long way away. I have many years to live. I have a long life to live. And then afterwards I can practice spiritual life. But Adav, right now, in the beginning. You know, actually sometimes, if we look at our life, see, life, time is so deceptive in one sense that, you know, we often count our minutes and hours quite carefully. You know, yes, in the morning in 10 minutes I have to do this, in 15 minutes I have to do this, then I have to catch this bus and go, and I have this much time I have to do this work. But often, we don't think of our life in terms of weeks and months. You know, what is the direction in which my life is going? So it's like, we are very busy in preserving our time on a moment-to-moment or a minute-to-minute basis. But is the direction in which my life is going productive? That often, we don't think about it so much. So, that's why Adav, seriousness of Krishna consciousness has to be right from the beginning. Now, the important principle that Krishna is telling in this verse is that Indriyanyadav. So this Adav, Prabhupada takes this to mean in terms of time. That in the beginning you control the senses. Now, there's another way of looking at Adav is that Krishna, in the previous verse has said that which are the three sitting places of lust?
Mind,
senses and intelligence. So among these three, the first that we should control is senses. So Indriyanyadav means begin by controlling the senses. So in our modern society, sense control is often thought of as unfashionable. Sense gratification is thought of as fashionable. But even for material life, a person needs to have some sense control. Without which, a person cannot even achieve things materially. Now, a student who wants to study and crack his exam, he has to have some amount of discipline in his life. A person who is working in a software company, at least during the time of the project deadline, he has to have some sense control. That sense control may not be in the sense of giving up sense gratification, but person munching one food and working on the computer and then spending sleepless nights and working hard. But some amount of ability to push away the urgings of the body and the mind have to be there. So even for material life, some amount of sense control is required. What then to speak of for spiritual life? But what Krishna tells over here is that among the senses, the mind and the intelligence, relatively speaking, the easiest to bring under control is the senses. Therefore, tackle the easiest enemy first. And if you start tackling the toughest enemy in the beginning, then what happens is, it's impossible. You know, from now onward, I will never ever think of self gratification. And afterwards, you will never think of not thinking of self gratification.
It's not possible only. So,
spiritual life is always progressive. To take one step at a time, and although we have a very lofty ambition in terms of becoming completely pure-hearted, but on one side a devotee is spiritually ambitious, but at the same time he is also spiritually realistic. What can I do at this level, at my level? So you know that in our spiritual life there always has to be this balance between our lofty standards and our realistic steps that we can take. If we are habituated, say, to taking meal 3 times a day, even on Ekadashi. From now onwards, all Ekadashi are fast nirjal. You know, one Ekadashi a year is okay, we can do that because everybody is doing it. And again, peer pressure works for our pleasure, our support at that time. But then, otherwise, it's not so easy. So maybe instead of 3, we can make it 2, or we can make it 1 meal and other time some liquid or something like that. So we always take our steps realistically. So, spiritual life is in that sense very practical. It's not that in order to do something, to make spiritual advancement, we have to do something extraordinary which nobody is doing. That's not necessary. But what we have to do is, whatever we are doing, we have to do it in a more concentrated, a more sustained and more pure-hearted way. If we do that, whatever we are doing, it's not that, you know, everybody is chanting 64 rounds, I have to chant 64 rounds every day to become pure. No, if you can chant 64 rounds once in a while, that's fine on Ekadashi. But that's not what is required. Because what happens whenever we try to do something extraordinary which nobody else is doing, a very real danger is that that will overpower us with pride. But what we are doing, whatever we are doing on a regular basis in Krishna, we do it in a more concentrated, sustained and pure, wholehearted or pure-hearted way. Concentrated means, we are chanting every day, it will with more greater concentration. It's not that we have to chant some new mantra or some, we have to chant some unnecessarily extra rounds. And sustained, you know, one day we concentrate and the next day we are completely distracted. Every day try in a sustained way. And more wholehearted or pure-hearted way. If we are trying to concentrate our mind, but we try to put aside all other desires. So if we do that, then we will find that we can make spiritual advancement. So, indriyanyadau. Now, the great advantage of Vedic culture and the great disadvantage of modern culture is that it makes this indriyanyadau, the Vedic culture made it very easy. Whereas the modern culture makes controlling the senses difficult. Why? Because in the modern culture, first of all, the contact between the opposite sex is very not only freely available, but it is glamorized, and because of that it is very difficult to control the senses. And secondly, first of all, so in the Vedic culture, men and women would live in separate quarters. Even when a man and woman would be married, they would not always be living together. The woman would have their quarters, the men would have their quarters. So because of that, the facility to control the senses was much more, because the contact was much lesser in general. And so not only is the contact more easily available, but worse than that, in modern society, people are in one sense brainwashed to become seductive sense objects. You know, men want to have big muscles and attractive bodies, and women want to have shapely forms by which they attract each other. So because of that, so the whole modern culture is based on agitating the senses and agitating the mind. And that's the smartam indriyanyado. Therefore it becomes more and more difficult. And that's why, as devotees, we need to develop a protective subculture within this dangerous outside culture. A protective subculture. A subculture means what? That within the community of devotees, we need to have our own culture. So that's why in devotee community, you know, we always stress that the Prabhuji should always wear dhuti kurta and the Mata should always wear for the yatras, like we have the Kodi, should wear sari or more modest dresses and come. So why? Because, you know, we come to the devotee community for shelter. If even the devotee community also we get agitated, then where is the shelter for us? Outside we are going to get agitated anyway. So Prabhupada says that, you know, the purpose of men and women in a Krishna consciousness movement is actually to serve Krishna, and we should not see each other as sense objects for our own enjoyment. So, you know, when Buddha started his teaching, first he said, we will not have any woman in our society. So there, one of his closest disciples was also his cousin Ananda. He told him, you know, if you don't have women, then you will lose 50% of the whole population. 50% of the people will not become your followers. You are losing 50%. So Buddha replied, but I accept women, then 50% of the men will go away.
So, but then, eventually Buddha agreed.
The point is that, actually, men and women, they can be very strong distractions for each other. That's why both men and women have to dress and act in ways which are not meant to attract each other, but which are meant to be attracted to Krishna. So, as devotees, you know, as young men, it's very easy to complain that women dress in agitating ways. But if you look at the history, you know, it was men who first adopted the Western dress. It was men who started wearing shirt pants, and women were still wearing saris. But then, as the men adopted the Western dress, gradually, what happened, if the men are going to be materialistic, then why should the women be behind? Women also will be materialistic. So, that's why, as devotees, you know, we cannot blame the outside world. We have to see whether I am following the proper culture. If I am following the proper culture, I am setting an example by which others will also start following the proper culture eventually. But as much as possible, to our capacity, we should develop a protective subculture. That's why the dealings between the opposite sex should also be, with the opposite sex, be respectful and polite, but not necessarily in the name of being respectful and polite, it will be prolonged and dallying and things like that. Yeah, they will avoid that. So, tasmatam indriyanyadav. As indriyanyadav, in the beginning, control the senses. And this control of the senses is actually possible if one makes resolutions. Or rather, one avoids resolutions to indulgence and gratification. Actually that word, sankalpa, you know, the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where the way to control the different urges is described, there it is described, sankalpa jayet kamaha. So different acharyas give different translations of this. So sankalpa jayet kamaha, Chakravarti Pal explains that when you make a resolution, this is an ekadashi, make a resolution, you will fast from grain. So like that you make a resolution. Okay, I am not going to indulge in sense gratification. So, by resolution, one can give up sense gratification. Another acharya explains that asankalpa jayet kamaha. That means, by not making plans, one can control lust. Like yesterday I was telling, the senses are going to come in contact with the sense objects. And to some extent, our minds are not in our control. So, imagination will also become active. But, the imagination itself cannot lead to any damage unless we decide to act on it. And that is the planning stage. Therefore, asankalpa jayet kama means, we said, I will never make plans to engage in sense gratification. That's why in the eight breaks of Brahmacharya, shravanam kirtanam keli, prekshanam guhya bhashanam, sankalpo adyavisayascha kriya nivrittirevacha. So, shravanam is talking about sex life.
Shravanam Kirtanam, basically thought about Vishnu, it is something else here. So
hearing our others talk about sex life and talking about sex life, Keli is darling. Keli is actually past tense. You know, we have this.
We have it in Mangala. So Keli is a performing past tense with women. That means, you know, passing time needlessly with them. That is the meaning. Keli. And then Prekshanam. Prekshanam is
glancing lustfully. Ikshay the eyes. Guhya Bhashanam. This confidential talking. Prabhupada is whispering. And then Sankalpo is making a resolution. The same point. And then after Adhivasaya. So Adhivasaya is actually endeavoring. So first makes a resolution, then one endeavors, and then Kriya Nivritti, indulgence. So Asankalpa Jayet Kamaha. To some extent, it is the first 4 or 5 Sharanam Kirtana. Everybody in this world is talking about sex. And it's difficult to avoid the vibrations, although we may not want to indulge in it, but it's difficult to avoid those vibrations. But actually, the gross fall down begins in the last 3 series. Sankalpa, Divasaya and Kriyanivritti. So, if we can check it at least at the Sankalpa level, then we can be protected. So yes, the desires will come, but we don't indulge in them. So that is what will be the theme of Krishna in the next two verses. So begin by controlling the senses. But Krishna will point out that controlling the senses by themselves is not enough. Actually, controlling the senses without higher knowledge and without higher taste can simply be a torture. And therefore Krishna takes the next step. If you remember 2.61, Tani Sarvani Sanyamya. That's the first step. But then next is Yukta Asi Tamatparaha. So there's two steps. The next step will be described by Krishna in the next 2 verses. So let's go to the next verse. Indriyani Paranyahu Indriyedhya Paramanaha Manasastu Para Buddhe Yo Buddhe Paratastu Saha. Yes. In translation?
The working senses are superior to dull matter. Mind is higher than the senses. Intelligence is still higher than the mind. And he, the soul, is even higher than the intelligence.
Yes. So this is the hierarchy Krishna is describing over here. So dull matter, that basically is coming from sense objects. Then above that is the Indriyani Paranyahu. Senses are above that. Indriyebhya Param Manaha. The mind is above that. Manasastu Para Buddhe. Yo buddhe paratastu saha. So this is the condition soul. And now above this, Prabhupada will explain the hierarchy, Prabhupada quotes the Upanishadic verse, that the super soul. So now naturally there is a gravity pull in material existence, which drags the conditioned soul towards the sense objects. But so one is we make a resolution to discipline ourselves. It's like the fourth regulatory principle, at least at a gross level, is no relationships outside marriage. So that's like a gross principle. So no tasmatam indriyanyad, I check the senses. But even after checking the senses, still the agitation of the mind is there. So then Krishna is describing this hierarchy. That actually, after we discipline the lower, then we have to start purifying the higher. And how to do that, he will describe in the next verse. So, do the analysis a little bit more after deciding the next verse.
Evam buddhe param buddhva samsabhyatmanam atmanah jahi shatrum mahavaho kamarupam durasadam.
So, evam, in this way, buddhe, with your intelligence, buddhva, understand. And the buddhva is like the buddha. Become intelligent, become enlightened, understand. Evam buddhe param buddhva. Buddha, understand that you are param, you are transcendental. So now in this hierarchy, there is a break over here. All the below what is there is material, what is above is transcendental. So param buddhva, understand that you are of a different nature. Evam buddhe param buddhva samstabhya atmanam atmanaha. So, here the word Atmanam, Atmana comes twice. So, the normal translation would have been that in this way, with the soul, discipline the soul. But that becomes very complicated to understand. Therefore, Prabhupada is using, therefore, with the intelligence, control the mind. With Prabhupada is a very interesting word. Deliberate spiritual intelligence. Deliberate means what? Deliberate means one way it means jaan bhuj ke karna. Deliberately done it. But another meaning of deliberate is after deliberation, after thought, consciously, knowingly. So deliberate spiritual intelligence. That means by conscious, thoughtful choice. So we use a deliberate, like, deliberately to do means to knowingly do. So like that, consciously, by a conscious, well-thought choice. What should one do? Jahi Shastrum Mahabaho. That, oh, mighty armed Arjuna, you are certainly one many warriors, one against many warriors, but this is the greatest enemy that you have to conquer. Mahabaho. Kama Rupam. The enemy of form of lust, Durasatam, which is very, very difficult to conquer. Durasatam. But formidable, Prabhupada translates there as. Very difficult to conquer, but it is conquerable. So what is Krishna telling over here? Krishna speaks a little bit abstract over here. It's a little philosophical over here. That's why in the next chapter, he will elaborate more clearly. What does it mean? Param Buddha. Fortunately for us, Prabhupada does not wait for the next chapter. Prabhupada gives us the practical application in this verse purport itself. So he says that what does it mean to understand that you are transcendental? It basically means to understand Jivera Sarupaya Krishnera Nitya Das. Because Aham Brahmasmi is one realization. But Aham Brahmasmi is not the complete realization. That's why, in general, Prabhupada did not quote Aham Brahmasmi much. Although that's a Mahavakya, according to Shankaracharya. But Prabhupada said that Aham Brahmasmi is a partial realization. The more important realization is that I am a servant of Krishna. Because if we act on the platform of service, automatically we will get spiritual realization. But just by coming to Aham Brahmasmi platform, we will not necessarily realize that I am a servant. Because we can even think that I am Brahman and I have merged with the Brahman. So therefore, to act on the spiritual platform, Prabhupada explains that to mean to act as a servant of Krishna. So to engage in the service of Krishna. So how do we engage in the service of Krishna? First of all, we have to understand that my nature is different from the nature which normally people think themselves to be. Most people think of themselves to be materialistic. So now if you look at this, see here, the connection of the soul, of the conditioned soul with the sense objects is not permanent. It's by choice. He gets attracted to sense objects and he connects himself. Similarly, the connection of the soul with the super soul is also not permanent. Super soul is permanently with us, but we are not necessarily connected with him permanently. So now that's what, you know, Krishna Bahir Mukha gives. The super soul is here, but he goes away. What is that verse of Prahlad Maharaj? Bahir Arthamani Naha. So Bahir Artha. The soul is here, the super soul is here, but he's turned away. Looking at the sense of this. So looking downwards. So how does one connect oneself with the super soul? Krishna is saying, through Buddhe. So through our Buddhe, we connect ourselves. As I said, there's an actual pull which will drag us down. Then what is going to raise us up? It is our intelligence to raise us up. At our advanced level, you know, there will be attraction, there will be love over here, which will connect us with the super soul and that will raise us up. But at our level, when we may not have that love, or at least we don't have that love in a sustained way, sometimes we feel very nicely attracted to Krishna and sometimes we feel even more strongly attracted to Maya. So, that attraction to Krishna is not very sustained for us. Therefore, at our level, what we can sustain is our intelligence. So, evam buddhe. So, if we have to keep our intelligence very strong, Prabhupada writes, that's why every day we should read, hear, discuss and preach so that we sharpen our intelligence. We sharpen our intelligence. Maya covers our intelligence. Avritam jnanam etena. So, with our intelligence, we keep understanding. Now, what do we understand with our intelligence? By our intelligence, we cannot conquer Maya. It is only by taking shelter of Krishna that we can conquer Maya. But by our intelligence, we can become convinced to take the need to take shelter of Krishna. Or even more fundamentally, by our intelligence, we can become convinced of the need to conquer Maya. Otherwise, if our intelligence is sabotaged, then we feel the need to surrender to Maya. Because we think Maya will give us enjoyment. And that's what happens to most people in the material world. Therefore, our intelligence, we understand, is not the means to conquer Maya, but it is the means by which we can feel the need to conquer Maya. Otherwise, we don't feel the need. So, if we are philosophically astute, philosophically sharp, then we understand that this is not going to lead to happiness for me. Therefore, let me hold off. Let me not indulge in it. Now, beyond this, if you see, the process of bhakti engages not just the intellect. The intellect is engaged through the process of, especially scriptural study, swadhyaya. The mind is engaged through the process of chanting, japa. Of course, the mind has to be engaged everywhere. Even in the process of study of scripture, also the mind is involved. But the primary engagement is of the intellect. Because we are trying to look, we are trying to understand. But in chanting, the primary engagement is of the mind. Because the mind is running here and there. And in the holy name, there is nothing for the intellect to churn on. We just have to surrender at that time. And then we also, so that through the mind we engage through our chanting. And here we engage this to our swadhyaya. And beyond this, our senses, we connect to Krishna through seva. And in this way, what we do is that we try to spiritualize our own existence. And what do? We offer the sense objects also to Krishna. You understand that? They are meant for Krishna's enjoyment. We understand that, you know, this is not, we take the food that we take, we offer it to Krishna first. And even if we are married, we understand this is not my family. You know, when Gaur Krishna Rao, he was a very cutting person. So one time, one devotee, he got married and he came with his wife to meet Gaur Krishna Babaji. He says, please give me your blessings and some instruction. He said, the first instruction for you is that, always remember that your wife is not your dasi, she is Krishna's dasi. So, like that. We engage everything that we have in Krishna's service. And in this way, actually, Krishna demonstrates this to us also. You know, he demonstrates as a Kshatriya how, you know, he's lavishly enjoying with 16,000 wives. But on the other hand, when Sudama comes to his house, not only is he serving Krishna, he's engaging Rukmini in the service. He's not only is he serving Sudama, he's engaging Rukmini in the service of Sudama. So, you know, that is, generally if we're speaking, a person feels, you know, that my family should serve only me. So that is actually Krishna is setting the example as a grihastha. Actually, everything that we have is meant for the service of Krishna and his representatives. So in this way, Krishna says, Jahi Shatrum Mahabaho. That in this way you can conquer lust. So, again, if we look at this, so basically there are three steps in this. There is Swadhyaya, there is Sadhana, and there is Seva. So, it's not that when we study Bhagavad Gita or when we study scripture, we come up with some new techniques. We come up with new techniques for practicing spiritual life. But what happens where, it's not that we will have any new techniques. The 64 items of devotional life is already given by Rupa Goswami and they are not going to change. But what happens by our scriptural study is that we get new convictions. The same old techniques are there, but we get a newer, deeper conviction to practice those techniques. And with this deeper conviction, we apply ourselves more. And then the same techniques will give us greater results. So, yes, certainly conquering lust is a great challenge. And you know, all of us are struggling. I can analyze this based on Bhagavad Gita very nicely, but all of us are under the are susceptible to Maya. And all of us need to pray to Krishna, we need to pray for each other. And along with that, we also have to keep our intelligence sharp, alert, so that we can protect ourselves. Because ultimately, Prabhupada writes that all of us are alone. At one, you see, there are two ways of looking at spiritual life. One is that I have to depend on the mercy of devotees, I have to please devotees. Yes, that is true. That is very much true. But then Prabhupada also says that, you know, all of us have to fly our own plane. So, we have to fly our own plane means when Maya is going to tempt us, you know, it's like we are flying on our plane. If some anti-aircraft missile comes, then that's going to hit only our plane. So like that, when the mind gets agitated, the sense object, you know, we may be in the association of devotees, but it's only our mind that is agitated. Of course, who knows? Everybody's mind is agitated like that. Nobody is telling each other. But
That is also possible. But in general, all of us, our minds are at different levels of agitation at different times. And sometimes the level of agitation becomes intolerable. So we have to fight our own battle. We can certainly take try to serve devotees, please devotees, take guidance and blessings from devotees, but we have to understand that it's our battle. And nobody else can fight that battle for us. And that's why what is always going, even the spiritual master is not going to be with us, the devotees are not going to be with us always in the physical sense. The devotees are also not going to be there with us always. But we have to pray to Krishna that our intelligence stays with us. And if that intelligence is not the intelligence of a jnani, that intelligence is the intelligence of a bhakta. The dhammi buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayantite. So devotee understands. How? So yena mam upayantite means, now in one sense Prabhupada uses this to explain how a devotee gets new ideas of how he can run the devotional service. You know, when some devotees would come up with some new project, this is what we can do. Prabhupada says, very good. Because you are sincere, Krishna is giving you intelligence of how to serve. That is true. But along with that, we go closer to Krishna by going away from Maya also. So, when the temptations come, how to keep a distance from the temptations, how to go away from the temptations? The super soul will give us that intelligence. That's why I'll conclude with this one last point. And the super soul manifests externally as the facilities for devotional service. This Guru, Sadhu, Shastra, as the deities, as the Vaishnavas, the spiritual master is, or rather, the super soul is manifesting himself in all these ways. So, when he is manifesting himself to us externally, if we take benefit of his association, by that we show him that actually I want your guidance, I want your presence, I want to come close to you. Then, even when those external manifestations of the super soul are not there, when we have shown him our sincerity, then he will manifest himself internally also. But when he is manifesting himself externally, and if we don't take advantage, if we are disinterested, if we are disinterested, not in the sense of being detached, but interested in some other thing, then the super soul will say that if we don't want the guidance, the super soul will say, okay, fine, I won't interfere in your life. And then we will find that at the critical moments of temptations, we'll find that nothing works. We don't know why we fall prey. Sometimes it's very easy to become discouraged in the battle against Maya. But what we have to understand is that even if you fail 1,000 times, it's not that the process is wrong, nor is it that there are two wrong conclusions that we can come to. One is that the process doesn't work. And the second is that I am hopeless. Both are wrong conclusions. And how these two conclusions come? Because of consulting the wrong person. It's like last time I remember I gave the example. If you're fighting with the enemy, then one boxer fighting another boxer. Bam! The other boxer knocks him, he's fallen down. And then he's lying down, and the other boxer is gloating over there. And at that time, the person boxing is lying down, Hey, can I defeat you? Never! So like that, the mind knocks us down and then we ask the mind only, can I really practice Krishna? Never! So, actually, you can't consult the enemy whether you can win the war. So the mind may give us these two wrong conclusions. First is that you cannot win, and second is your weapon is useless. So like that, you are hopeless and your process is useless. There are two wrong conclusions. But the right conclusion is that we have not prepared sufficiently. Why was I defeated? Because I did not prepare sufficiently. So that means yes, I have to chant more attentively, I have to hear scripture more carefully, and basically prepare myself more. The one thing is that as devotees, some of us are initiated, others are going to be initiated. So, we have committed our life to practicing Krishna consciousness to some extent. And even if we say, I can't fight with Maya, we can't surrender to Maya completely also. We can't live a completely sinful life. And even if we try, our bodies will not allow us to. Bodies have limited facility for enjoyment. So, in that sense, giving into Maya completely is not an option for us at all. So then, the best thing to do is that we have to fight. And if we have to fight, then we have to be, we have to consult and connect with those who will encourage us in the fight and not discourage us in the fight. Therefore, as it is said, we never lose
till we lose hope. But if we lose hope, then nobody can help us to win. But as the words, we may fall many times. But what is important is that we don't lose the spirit. And it's not that we think that falling is also normal. I'll keep falling and I'll keep rising. No. That is
no, actually we have to improve our standards.
There's no doubt about it. But how do we improve our standards? By strengthening our spiritual connection. It is not just by just becoming determined to do it. We have to strengthen our spiritual connection. We have to see what is it that gives me strength in my spiritual life. That is chanting extra rounds, studying scriptures more, it's doing associating with a particular devotee more, or it's maybe doing deity worship, whatever. For different devotees, maybe different things. But if we strengthen our spiritual connection, we make ourselves more strong spiritually, then we can all surely overcome temptations. That's why our resolutions often are more Maya centered than Krishna centered. Sometimes we make a resolution on Ekadashi, I'll fast spiritual. Okay, well, that is not the more. Maybe it's better to make a resolution and I shall chant 64 rounds. Because that is a more Krishna centered resolution. So, like that, sometimes we may do something wrong, we fall prey, I will never do this again. That is more of a Maya centered resolution. Now, of course, it's not Maya centered because we want to go towards Krishna. But still, we are more conscious of what I should not do than of what I should do. And what happens when, like yesterday I was saying, when the spates of madness come, we may not be able to resist whatever we have resolved not to do. And then again, if we fail, we become discouraged. Therefore, it's better to make a more resolute positive commitment. Okay, that means, I will do this more regularly. I'll chant 4 extra rounds or whatever. I will read scripture more regularly and become more diligent in that. And if we do that, then gradually we'll get the strength to go beyond the reach of temptations. And we will all be victorious. As Krishna is saying, Jahi Shatru Mahabaho Arjuna, conquer this great enemy of lust. So like that, we will also be able to conquer by the grace of Guru and Krishna. So quickly summarize. We started by discussing about Jnana Vijnana Nashanam. So sense gratification destroys knowledge because it perpetuates the bodily misconception. And it destroys our realization because pratyaksha anumana gets used in a purpose that is contrary to scripture, not in accordance with scripture. It also destroys the urge for self-realization because sense gratification makes us feel comfortable in material life. And then we have to begin as soon as possible, as soon as we realize the seriousness. And although we also have to begin with the senses. So at least we create a subculture within our devotee culture by which we don't agitate each other and we try to protect each other in our Krishna consciousness. And then we discussed lastly about this hierarchy in the 43rd verse. So at our level the intelligence has to be very alert to help us to recognize that Maya is dangerous and I have to stay away from it. And then how do we stay away? That is by taking shelter of Krishna through chanting, through seva, so various activities of devotional service. And lastly we discussed that when we are overpowered by Maya, we should not consult the mind itself. We use two wrong conclusions. The process doesn't work, or I am no good. But actually the thing is, now the process is also good, I am also good. But I have to train myself more. I have to equip myself more, strengthen myself more. And then we can all overcome temptations. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki
jai,
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai,
Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki
jai,
Tai Gaura Premanand. Thank you.